Welcome to Rocket Talent, a podcast dedicated to helping you, the tech professional, learn from real-world discussions with notable leaders in the product management, data science, and engineering space. Welcome to the Rocket Talent Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Spies, and today we have a very special guest. Please welcome Tancho Margovic to the call here on the Rocket Talent Podcast. Tancho, how's it going, man?
Hey, John. Doing good?
Awesome. So the reason I wanted to bring Tancho on is we kind of go way back when we met while I was working at Dashlane. And Tancho, out of my 2.5 years at Dashlane, was someone that always stood out. One, because he was very, very funny. But two, I think the very first time we met, you remember the first Dashlane office right in the 11th district there, where like you had the little alley and everyone was just like smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee?
Yeah. The one next to the cemetery?
Yeah. So a little bit more common in Europe for people to smoke cigarettes and drink their espresso. And flew out to Paris for the first time and got like no sleep. My stomach was all ripped apart. I smelled terrible. And I see Tancho and a few others just kind of downing espressos and drinking coffee. And I'm like, I don't know, this is going to be a long day. And but no, he was a super nice guy. And from there, we started to build a friendship. So really happy to have you on the show. And every time I came to Paris, I was in good hands. He took me out. We shared some funny stories. And
it's been a while since the first time you were in Paris.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about it. It's been like a very long time.
So the reason I wanted to bring Tancho specifically on is not just because we had some good laughs while he smoked cigarettes in front of me, but for real, I think he has an amazing story that can be shared. Tancho was the Android engineer at Dashlane, and Dashlane is a password manager digital wallet that helps people store all their credentials. And he came into the company and started to build the app from basically nothing, but was really persistent and building a really great team. But by the end, the app was featured on by Google and was even ranked top the Google App Store's Editor's Choice, which is a huge recognition in the Android community. I think only like 40 apps a year get recognized. Companies like Netflix are up there. So for a smaller company that doesn't have such a brand recognition, it definitely was a huge milestone. And I think what was really helpful and what I wanted to share is Tancho's story and how he ended up at Dashlane specifically. And for those that are in the Android community that are trying to build applications, you know, how you go about this, right? I mean, some of it is a mixture of persistence, others is a mixture of luck, but I wanted to have Tancho share this story with you. So why don't we start from the very beginning and when you started at Dashlane?
Yeah, so it started like really early in the life cycle. I think I was somewhere between employee number 10 and employee number 15. I'm not exactly sure about the number. But I was definitely the first person that was working on Android. At the time when I joined, there was only the desktop. It was in private beta and there was no mobile apps of any kind. I needed to port a bunch of desktop code, which is written in C++ with Qt and whatnot, to port it to work in mobile and then this to be reused across Android and iOS. So that was one of the most horrible experiences in my life because it was the first time I was facing this kind of a challenge, taking code written in C++ for the desktop to port it to work on mobile. And I had no idea how to do this with native code. So 3 months in, I finished the first port. We had a binary that was kind of working. This was not even the application. This is just the like core sync engine for the system. For those of you that don't know the company, it's a password manager that securely transports your credentials with you. So this was the synchronization and encryption engine, really the heart and the core of the thing. So then once I did this, I remember that we had the first kind of test passing through. I did the UI within a week because we had the core engine, the synchronization and encryption part, but the actual app was non-existent, right? There was nothing. So within a week, I managed to start an app from scratch, where you could actually see a few items that you could synchronize across the rest of the system. So desktop and Mac and whatever. So in the beginning, it was like cloak and dagger in terms of how you work. Nobody needs to see what you're doing. As long as it works, it's fine. And the worst part is that most of the people in the office were iPhone users. So yeah, getting visibility in the office was even really difficult at the time, because this was 2011 to 12. Yeah, it was an interesting experience.
But is that a common trend, right? When you're building an app from scratch and there's already an application on the desktop, that you got to do something in Portal, take the existing code base and make it work for mobile? Is that pretty standard?
Oh, no, absolutely not. It is nowadays, let's say, maybe. But at the time, the problem was that there was very little tooling to allow you to do that. So one of the biggest challenges I faced was code that was written essentially for desktop was supposed to be ported to mobile. So there's no tooling for debugging. There's no tooling for figuring out why your compiler breaks, why your linker breaks. Google did not intend at that point in time for code to be written in C++. There was the ability for the experts in the area. I was by far an expert in the area. I was not by far an expert in the area. So the point was that it was super difficult to figure out how to get this done. And it was the first time I was doing it. I had experience in C++, had experience in Java, but I never had an experience with binding those two languages on the platform. So for the most part, what I did was like code would compile, I would run the app, and I would just hope for the best. So if it crashes, you just shrug your shoulders and that's life. And then you try to figure out what's going wrong and you lose hair trying to figure out how this bug happened. But the problem was that the tooling was just not there. After a while, things got better because Google started officially supporting that as a development process. But in the beginnings, it wasn't the case. The application was super fast because it was written in C++, like the sync engine, much faster than Java at the time. But the problem was that to get it to that point, you really needed to know what you're doing and how you're doing it. So I paid the price because stuff that I would normally do, for example, nowadays within a week, it took me months to do that back then. And I had to figure out how to do them.
Right. Obviously, when you're an engineer, you're solving different problems all the time. But it sounds like this was one that you knew what you were signing up for, right? Like when they told you, hey, this is what you're doing. It's not like you were naive to that this would be the challenge. Obviously, you don't really know what you're getting into until you get into the thick of it. But at one point, were you pulling your hair out, and what did you do mentally to kind of power through and not be overwhelmed?
Yeah, to be honest, I like these kinds of challenges. This is fun for me. It was difficult from this perspective, and when I tell it to people, it really was difficult to figure things out when you don't have the support of the community, you don't have the proper tooling, but I love these kinds of challenges. That's my driver. So a way of saying it is saying you lose hair or you like... You're not sleeping enough because you're thinking of the problem. But for me, that was a challenge and not a problem. So that's what I expected from the job.
Right. So at what point, you said about 3 months in, you started to put some UI, some components were showing. When did this thing become presentable enough that you could actually even show it internally?
We had to start the ball rolling, right? So the first thing that we did is we shipped the app to the public, to the Play Store, even though at the time, this was just a few weeks after the public receiving the desktop code. So there was the first desktop client for Windows or Mac, I'm not sure which one was first. And then the mobile clients kind of shipped together within a few days from each other. So it was super important to have version 1 public, regardless of the feature set, of quality of it, like is it good or bad. But once it was out there for the investors at the time, it was just important for a version to be out there. The adoption of the version was a different topic. The first war that I had to win was like to win the war in the office. I had to make sure that I'm faster than the other platforms. I had to make sure. And at this point in time, I was all alone. There was no other person working on Android. It was me working on Android and the iOS guy working on the iOS platform, like for the Objective-C code. So it was a lot of fun in the sense that there was a war going on with other people that we had to make sure that we are faster in development. Like I was faster in development so that features which come in could first be seen on mobile, on Android even. So that way I could kind of win my ground in the office. You know, I needed to make sure that I increase my personal visibility, my platform's visibility. And the way to do it would be to be the first one out when it comes to new features.
Right.
And this was super difficult because some of them were dependent on desktop code or server side or whatever. So you had to make sure that you are the first one that can, for example, provide a device to product or the CEO or whomever to share what you've done, because this was the kind of internal visibility war.
Sure. Not in just in terms of internal visibility, right? But when you started there on the iOS side for iPhones, there was already an existing app, no? Or it was similar?
So yeah, me and the iOS developer, we started, I'm not exactly sure, but I think like a few weeks apart.
Okay.
There was another engineer that was working both desktop and mobile. So she was kind of transitioning between two platforms. So there was more bandwidth on the iOS front. So that was my struggle. Like I was alone. So I was trying to make a dent in the Android world because there was no other person to help me. So they were faster to market by a few days, weeks, mostly due to like different decisions that were being made and mostly engineering decisions. Like, for example, the porting of the code that I mentioned, like this was something I was struggling on by myself. So it took me a little bit of time. But long story short, the bigger problem for me was the fact that most of the people in the office were using iPhones, like the engineers, founders of the company, the CEO, like that was the struggle that I, like even if I had something to show, I actually had only my device to show it on because everybody else was an iPhone user. So they were waiting for the other platform to come up.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy. And I think back then, at least in the US, where a lot of the team was focused, even though it was a global company, obviously there was globally more Android users, but the demographic that the company was going after were mostly initially iPhone users. So there was a lot more just understanding and thought around that. So even though it was still one in one, I guess, from the product stand, from the marketing standpoint, that had all the attention, which is crazy. So you launched this thing, right? And then what? Because it sounds like you didn't really have as much support. They hired you to say, hey, let's do this. We knew it was important. But most small company, there's only so many resources and most of them were dedicated towards the other platform. So kind of what did you do to market this yourself?
The company was very interesting at the time, like from that perspective, because it had a user base which was completely different than what I was used to. So stuff which I used to develop before were applications that were for the general public. And then this company built an identity management system, which was very, very specific. So the target audience was a person that was working in the finance sector, non-tech savvy person. They're not willing to be flexible for you. The application for them is a tool that they need to use and it needs to be fully transparent. So they can't be stopped through their tasks because you're fiddling with some screen that should have been different so that it's more intuitive. It took us a little bit of time to learn this. And so for a while, the application was kind of being developed between product and engineering. We didn't do necessarily a very good job in the sense that we were doing the best we could as engineers, but we never actually thought of trying to do things differently. So at one point, there was a company that was done that was called, I think, user testing or something of the sort, where they give your app to somebody in the US. You would kind of try to pick your own audience, and then they record themselves trying to do something that you provide. So we had things like create a credential, login in a website or something of the sort. So they had problems figuring out how to get to that stage. How do you even log in? You know? And this was interesting to see because for the first time in my life, I could actually see my software being used by somebody I've never even met that has no technical education or things I would expect them to know. It was just a random person somewhere in the world that was trying to use the app. So this was like a revelation of sorts where I figured out that our app, like our UX sucks, like users can't use our app just because it's too engineer-centric. So what I started doing is I started looking as to what are those apps which are on the Play Store. And then I tried to reach out to Google to say, like, guys, I need some help. Like, how do I fix my stuff? So I figured out that there's Google has a career path which is called developer advocates. So these are people that promote Google topics which are important to the open world, right? One of these people is a guy I met at the time. He's a developer advocate for the Play Store. So exactly the person that I kind of tried to reach. So I said, like, how do you feature apps? Like, what is this magic? You know, how does an app get features? How do you know it's good? Because that was my problem. Like, I didn't know how to. I was thinking my app is good until I saw other people using it. So then I figured out that the Play Store actually has a review board. So you send them an email. You provide your app. They take some time until your app kind of gets to the top of the stack. And then they pull you up and do a review. There are multiple types of review, and I'm pretty sure it's no longer true today. Like if I tell you the types that I had in 2013, I think, it would probably not be the same types today because they probably refined a lot. But generally, you provide your app and they give you feedback on what you need to change from their perspective. And again, not as engineers, more as proper users, you know? So they would give you Google guidelines for UI and such. And that would kind of, that was the feedback that we received first. And we changed the app, we changed the UI. We didn't like do an overhaul. I think we were planning to do an overhaul, and then we kind of implemented their feedback on a like within sprint of sorts. So it wasn't an effort. It was something that I kind of tried to push through, you know, for let's say free of charge to the company. And that's how the application got featured for the first time. So this was a huge, huge thing, you know, with a little bit of effort, with a little bit of communication and outreach, the app got featured on the Play Store, which was the biggest thing that happened in the mobile part of the world at the time. I even think that no other application was featured on any other store, because there's the Mac Store and the Apple Store. And we were the first platform that was featured of any kind.
That's crazy.
And then like this, yeah, it is, it is.
Let me ask you a question. What type of persistence did you need to have to kind of get things actually even considered and looked at, right? Like, did they blow you off at first, or what was that like?
Yeah, so that's the beauty of it. We didn't. I did the initial outreach myself to some of the developer advocates. They put us in the queue. So the guy was like somebody I've never met. I didn't even know who the person was. Afterwards, like I met the person and we worked a lot together. But in like the first moment was just an email to a person that I've never met that just is noted somewhere as a contact. So they're very welcoming. Maybe the policy changed a little bit today compared to the past. They're also probably very much more rigorous because of all the malware that's out there that they wanna. So they're probably in terms of testing, they're much more rigorous. But at the end of the day, they will still reply. I'm pretty confident that if you hit a closed door, don't like give up. Really try. There's probably more than one person that's in charge of that topic. So do a broadcast, send an email to a few people, try to do an outreach to promote your app as a developer. And this is not as like, this is not marketing. This is you as a developer trying to improve your app. And don't contact Google saying, I want to be featured, I want to be featured, or I want to be in the editor picks. Outreach to them, extend an outreach and try to get them to give you feedback on how to improve your app. That's what matters, because that's what you're trying to do. Once you have a communication channel, try to build on it, and then it's really easy to go through, because they really appreciate the fact when you have people that care about what they're developing, care about their apps, and they're trying to make them better. And that's the kind of the reward of making your app better, is being featured, being like in top whatever, 5, 6, 7. And the whole thing is that the feature thing, getting featured on the Play Store was a big thing, because we had a lot of traffic coming in. There was then an organic flow. Being featured is on two, used to be able to happen on two, like let's say in two types. One is by promotion from the store staff, which is what we had when we did the outreach. But the other one is because of spike of downloads. So if you have a lot of downloads on a certain app, the Play Store team will look at the app, and if they like it, they'll also promote it. So for example, we were featured in the US store and in some of the European stores, but then we organically got featured in Brazil, in separate stores within Europe, because the Play Store has multiple kind of variations depending on the country. So there were a lot of organic things that happened, and our traffic spiked. We probably got 10 times more users, tenfold the amount of users that we had previously. So a lot of nice things happened, and Android took off.
That's crazy. So help me understand, because again, I was there a little bit later, but I know at one point Dashing was featured in the US by that demographic that they were initially, the app was targeting, via the New York Times. So did this happen after that, or did this happen before? Like, was there some momentum, or this was completely separate?
So the New York Times article was a separate topic. I think this was something that happened through the company itself. I don't know whether the journalist was a user and he wanted to do a piece on the product, or the other way around, like that's not even important. But I think the good thing was that there was a confluence of a lot of things that converged at the same time. And we were featured almost at the same time as the article happened. I can't remember whether it was just before or just after. I think it was just before. I might be wrong. But these were unrelated. And the good thing is that there was a convergence of channels which kind of opened to us. And we got a huge spike in user base at the time. All helped. So the article that was in the New York Times helped open up other fronts. I think organically, after a while, we actually got to editor picks. Organically might have been within a few months or something. That was kind of, or within the year at least. But in any case, it was something of the sort where something happened, and then another thing happened, and another, and another, and another. So organically, things kind of took off on their own. Of course, for the editor picks, like this didn't organically happen per se. in the sense that after getting featured, we actually liked the feedback that we got from Google. So we asked for a more thorough review and then another and another. So we were improving our app multiple times. And then one of the developer advocates said, like, you guys went through all the filters for UI and UX from the company, so you might as well apply to get editor picks. We did. They did another review. We fixed a few issues that they found. So for the editor picks, I remember that they even went as far as looking at the decompiled code, saying like you shouldn't use these libraries, you should use others and like version numbers and whatnot. So it was a lot of effort. Things didn't just magically happen while we were drinking cocktails at the beach, but there was a lot of momentum building up at the same time from multiple fronts for sure.
Yeah, it's a good story. So elaborate on that point when you kind of came, rather than being like, hey, I want to be featured and what you can do for me, you were more, hey, how do we make this better? What can we do? And also, what was the shift in mindset that you did? Because you have to start thinking like a product owner, right? And how do we build this better? And
yeah, for sure. The important thing is that the first thing that happened was being featured. But then, as I said, a lot of stuff happened at the same time. So as the platform was getting, the Android product was being rewarded by the ecosystem of sorts, the product team started paying more attention to us. We got a lot of more love from the design team because we asked for it for the featured part. So they kind of saw that the investment was worth it. So we got even more investments coming in the sense that we got a dedicated designer for Android then, because there was in the beginning, there was just one designer that was doing the design for everything. So eventually we got our own designer, a dedicated person that was working on Android specifically, et cetera, et cetera. But I think when we got the editor picks, even our CEO got to the point where he said, I'm switching my iPhone for an Android device. I haven't been using this application. Apparently, it's really good. So that was like, in a way, a very good recognition for myself, because it's very nice to have the work that you're doing in a company for it to be appreciated. And I think the appreciation point was that a lot of people in the company kind of started switching to Android gradually. It's not just because of me, because of the product that I built. And at this point in time, I think that we already had a team of two or three people. So the team kind of grew as well. But in general, there was a lot of excitement about Android because things were just happening around it. It's not every day that the company gets within from zero users to getting featured on the Play Store to getting editor picks. We even got best of 2015, I think. There were a lot of things happening around the same time. So it was kind of a train of events. So we got best of, again, thinking 2015. And then we actually started a much stronger partnership with Google. So as this happened, it made sense for people to buy Android devices. We invested more into hardware. And we had, I'm not sure whether it was a partnership or a contract or something, but we started getting early access for the upcoming OS. There was even a project we did where we were on Google I/O and a lot of things happened.
Right. Help me explain. So initially, the relationship with the Google advocate or Google expert was someone you didn't know. And it was like, hey, how do we make this better? Can you help? And eventually they respond, look at this, look at that. And so like, it sounds like a lot of this chain of communication was initially via email and some back and forth. But obviously, that was a big game changer and started to give you a lot more insight. But at what point do you think you kind of chimed in to help build that relationship with those folks beyond just, hey, how can we help? That kind of made it stand out a little bit, where you weren't just every other app developer trying to get attention. What tips there do you have? Because obviously relationships are important and there's something you did right.
Yeah, so to be honest, the first thing that happened is the relationship did start from an email. And it was on email for a while, maybe even after the first featuring. The person that I talked to was in London. I was in Paris. So I couldn't just get a trip to go to London to meet this person. And he wasn't coming to Paris for any reason at the time. So there was nothing I could do. However, once we had a few things happening, I got an invite for him to come to the Google office just so that we meet. So I'm not sure. I think the first time we met was in the Paris office, because he was coming to Paris for some reason after months or maybe a year after the first thing happened. And then we met in the Paris office, and then things kind of took off. So afterwards, I had a trip to London for some other project. So I called the guy and I visited the Google office in London. So we kind of met for the first few times and then built a relationship where we actually knew each other more than just an email. And this definitely helped. You can get there. And one of the things which is important, I think, is try to be more visible on conferences. Visibility is achieved in one of two ways. You can either be a presenter or you could talk to presenters. But the most important thing in conferences is the networking bit. So that's the way I expanded my network, because the first time I went to Google I.O., I actually went to all the booths I could find and I tried to meet all the people I could meet from there. And I actually didn't go to the talks because I could see them on YouTube afterwards when I'm at home, relaxed, and then pay attention. And then to the contrary, I actually didn't go to the talks. I went to all the booths to meet all the people that I could meet and make as many communication channels, open as many communication channels as I could. This would be kind of a sublimit of everything, I would say, but everything starts with an email, and then the email communication will last for a while. This person that you've never met needs to learn who you are. You need to ask for feedback, and they will invest into that communication channel, so they will trigger other people to start the investment, let's say, in your product, and then you have to come back with the update that they're asking for. So once you have a few back and forths, then it's really easy to build up on that relationship.
Right. So you went to Google I.O., and at this time, you were actually asked to present, is that right? Or were you still, tell me about that specifically.
Yeah, you don't get to present on Google I.O. But what happened is we were called to be an early access partner at the time when permissions and the fingerprint scanner were added to the platform. So long story short, due to a lot of successes that we had with the Play Store team, Google wanted to kind of reward companies that work well with them on that front. So we were asked to be an early access partner for the fingerprint scanner. So this was a specific thing because it required a physical device that didn't exist. What happened is we got called to be an early access partner. They gave us the SDK, but they said, due to the fact that we have need to have a physical device, we need to visit their office and actually do the implementation there, because you were not allowed to have anything ahead of time. And this, like, we're talking months before Google I.O., before the new version of the OS was presented. So that was super cool in one hand, because you got early access. But the other problem that I had was I needed to go to the US. This would have been my first time at the time, and I didn't have a visa. And I had to make a trip to the US within 2 days. So this was almost impossible for me to do, because you don't go to the US embassy saying, I need a visa to get there for the first time, and you get screening within 24 hours. This just doesn't happen. So long story short, I went to London. I found a developer advocate that I already had a relationship with. And we did work on the prototype. And the cool thing was that I was the first potential partner that actually managed to present the feature in their app. So this required you to implement new API, stuff that didn't exist at the time, on a device that you have no knowledge of. So we sent the video to the product manager from Google. So ours got accepted, and then another company, I think PayPal, got accepted as well. So the competition in that space was between us, PayPal, Bank of America, Netflix, and Amazon, I think. So us and PayPal were both presented at conference. So we weren't presenting anything. This was a person from Google presenting their product, which was the fingerprint scanner on Android. So they were showing how that piece of software works on partner apps, and we were one of those partner apps. But the cool thing was that due to speed of execution, I guess, and sheer luck, only our app and PayPal were presented on stage. So it was a very cool experience. Plus, like, we got to have a free of charge visit to Google I.O., all expenses paid and everything. So that was super cool.
That's awesome. So I guess the story just kind of continues, really not giving up and continuing that relationship, kind of building a brand for yourself through those earlier conferences and meeting people and getting that exposure led to combination of all this kind of coming to fruition, and obviously a huge milestone when you came in, literally started on nothing. The company wasn't even that focused on it, to now being presented with the likes of PayPal, right? And
yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely. So the cool thing was that this was a very interesting journey for me. I joined at a point where the company didn't have any presence on mobile whatsoever. And then within my time with the company, we went from zero code, zero users, to some code written, and then zero users, and then eventually to millions of users on mobile, and even to the point we were featured on the stores, even got pulled up on the front and center on Google I.O. This was within the conference, not on the presentations, for example, for the key speakers. But we were on one of the slides for the keynote, which was super cool, right? You don't get that to happen on a daily basis. And this was mostly due to developer involvement. This had very little to do with the company itself, because the relationship that was built on this front, there was a business part of the relationship as well between two companies, but this was on other fronts. But most of this was fruits of just developer relations, which is very nice. It means that you kind of hold your own fate in that ecosystem.
How much of this do you think was just being part of the right company, the right idea that captured Google's interest? Obviously, there's a lot of other developers that may or may not have taken the same path, but the product just wasn't as well received, or the Google folks didn't think it was as interesting. You think that played a factor? I'm assuming it did. Or you really think, who knows,
right? There's two fronts. The first one is regarding featuring, regarding building a relationship with these people. So I think that's pure effort. It doesn't make any difference which app you're building. This is mostly linked to how much you're willing to invest in the work you're doing. Regarding the early access program for Google I.O. And that specific part of the topic, I'm pretty sure that the application had a huge impact on the choice, because they were presenting a biometric authentication system. The application was a password manager where biometrics are important, and you want to make sure that it's easy for you to authenticate to get inside the app or to log in into another app. So this part was probably influenced by nature of the application. The reason why PayPal, for example, was there is because via PayPal, you can transfer funds from one account to another, so send money to your friend, and then that's you authenticate via your fingerprint. So they were strategically picking applications, but it doesn't necessarily mean that there's no other early access programs, because for the permissions aspect, there's another application which was presented. And the way that they work is they will try to pick applications which are known with people. They will not present like some Looney Tunes app from somewhere that has like 100 users. They will present an app which is probably featured, that was somewhere in the top of the listings. So maybe the specific program that you might get into is linked to what you do, but the chances of you linking to Google on that front are much higher if you're in the listings than if you're not.
And it all started from building the relationship and being persistent.
Yeah, everything started from an email where I just wanted to make sure that I try to do the best I can.
Cool. So if you could do it all over again, and someone that are in similar shoes or trying to get recognition, getting no love from the Play Store, if we had to kind of give some key talking points today that you still think are applicable to help them get more recognition, build stronger application, what would your top be that you wish you knew from the get-go?
The important thing is to realize that you live in an ecosystem. If you're an Android developer or an iOS developer, you're developing for a single ecosystem. You might be developing B2B app that you can market through your partners or something of the sort, but if it's an application for everyone, if it's something, your own project that you're doing from home, you're essentially developing for an ecosystem. The only discovery mechanism that you have is the App Store or the Play Store. As this is the case, you want to make sure that the App Store gives you the best chances of discovery possible. So there's also the approach which people usually get, which is SEO, search engine, because the Play Store has its own kind of micro search engine. SEO is one part, but then the fact is that you might get a lot of feedback from the appropriate channels directly. Apple already has kind of a program where they pre-screen all the apps, but they have such an approach as well. They're a bit more restrictive as to who they talk to compared to Google, at least from my experience. But both companies have a very big push towards developer relations. So my suggestion to everyone out there that's developing apps on mobile is, first of all, try to go to conferences as much as you can, local or global, whatever. And if you see somebody from Google that's working on the platform that you're working with, and you have specific questions, go talk to them, try to get help. Very often they will really be helpful. Second thing is try to find developer relations person from the area that you work with and try to ask, what are the chances of getting a review from the Google board? No links attached, just people getting to see your app and then giving you thoughtful, concise feedback on what you can improve. And these are usually the people that kind of shape the Play Store. So once you get this, implement the changes that you have and then forward it back. This will just get their attention, right? So then you can start asking as to what you can do to get more. And they're really trying to help. There's a lot of guides online that will help you to start with. So make sure that you go through them first so that you don't get an email which is, look at our support page. Make sure that you've crossed your T's and dotted your I's before you start the whole communication. But generally, they will care how to help you to improve, especially the developer relations.
And is there, not just on Google or the Android info page, but is there other websites that you highly recommend that kind of giving some of that guidance?
It's much simpler now with material design. At the time, there was no guidelines on UI, UX. So what I'm doing myself is I'm on a few news sellers, Android Weekly, for example. That's a very nice one. There's others as well. Generally, engineers listen to the podcasts coming from the Android team at Google. There's also a lot of podcasts for Apple as well. So this is kind of the way I inform myself, and I assume other people do the same thing. So if you don't start doing it, there's a lot of podcasts which will tell you a lot about how things are done. There's two other aspects which are very important. One is the app you're developing it for your end users. So make sure that you reply to all the comments on the App Store and the Play Store, and make sure that you really try to resolve their issues, because Google is really looking into this. They want to make sure that people that get featured are people that try to help their users solve a problem. And then the last bit is, if you have issues and you want to solve those issues, one way of doing it is doing it yourself. So if you have a bug in an open source library, push a commit, fix it. Usually people will accept the fix and then you will have contributed to open source. And this is also a very, very important thing, because this helps you build connections as well.
So across the board, just kind of be persistent and add value, not just take, and see how you can continue to help them versus just ask. Sounds like there's a lot of themes here.
It's what you just stated is probably the biggest and most important point of the whole talk, is try to add value and not just get value from someone. Otherwise, nothing will work.
So at the very end, it sounds like you kind of left things on a really high note. I know Google forever was trying to create their own version of a password manager, but it was hard, and because everything was just on one platform. And I guess you had an ability to even take this to the next level and really gain, be part of something even bigger. So help me understand that. I guess it was the Project YOLO?
Yeah. So this was a fun experience. So at one point, I made a contact with an engineer that was working in Google at the time. This was a person working on the identity team or the authentication team. I'm not sure exactly how they marked themselves. The idea was, we had an idea of building kind of an SDK. Going back to the giving value, the idea was that we wanted to build an authentication platform where it's going to be kind of global and not local. What I mean by that is, imagine you buy a new device. You will then download and install probably about 30 to 50 apps within the first 24 hours, right? So you have to log into all of them. You have to log into your Facebook, to your Twitter, to your email, to Spotify, to I don't know what else you use, but there's a bunch of usernames and passwords you need to add. And the deal was, how can we make this simpler for the people using the platform? So we started thinking about something, and then a few discussions later, the guy showed up at our doorstep. So this was a guy from the identity team that wanted to help kind of build up on the idea that we initially started. So we started Project YOLO, it's not the YOLO, you know, this one's you only log in once. So the deal was, I think it's still working today now. The deal is, the application that shows up on your screen sends a request to the system saying, I need a password. And then any application that has a collection of passwords, be it a password manager, a browser, or something of the sort, or even the system would say, I have passwords, which one do you want? So the application would pick the one that it needs, and then this has no visibility to the user. It's completely transparent. And then it would get the credential that it needs from the password manager. So what happens to the user is, they open the app for the first time, they see a login screen, the system does this magic, and you just get a tiny pop-up from the system saying, you have a credential for this specific app, in that other app. Put your finger on the screen or on the input your PIN code so that you authenticate to allow this to happen. So the end user kind of trying to just have this happen. So the end result is you authenticate into 50 apps in less than 3 minutes without any effort, any typing, usernames, passwords, searching, no, nothing. So this was a super cool thing. The best of it is that the project was started as an open source project between us and the engineer from Google. And then we kind of got some traction and got the backing from both companies. And it hit off. The best of all is that code that we wrote was at the end added to the Google Play Store services. And that means that every device in this world has this code on it. So in a way, multiple times per day, our code is being executed around the globe from that open source project, which happened 2 years ago.
Awesome. Well, this is really some good nuggets there, and I really appreciate it. At the end, it sounds like you did a shitload of networking. You went to these conferences, you met a ton of different people, and you kind of hit that 4-year mark, feel like you accomplished a lot at Dashlane. And I guess today, if you look back at it all, obviously that set you up, but just some high-level notes of beyond the recognition while at Dashlane, but what else did that help you with in terms of, like, were you getting offers left and right? Obviously, it's tough to find good mobile engineers, and you started to kind of build a bit of a track record. So what was that like?
So even though maybe it sounds like a lot of fun explaining it now, yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of the curse of being a developer. We're very popular nowadays. The most important thing that I got as a win from this project was I learned how big things within our world happen. The project which I mentioned, even though it's a background thing that nobody is actually going to see in terms of like experience it as a product, but they will benefit from it, I learned a lot technically as to how big things can happen from just a good idea. The best thing, for example, is that nowadays I have a lot of different criteria for code quality than I had back in the days. The reason why is because for the YOLO project, imagine if your code is running on all Android devices in the world, that's not something that can be flaky or can have bugs. That has to be rock solid, very well written, very well thought of, with multiple reviews passed. So from the engineering perspective, it taught me how to do stuff, let's say, properly. Quality control is one thing, which is, we can talk about it at another point in time if you want, but that's something that definitely kind of helped me push into what I'm doing today, where I manage multiple teams at the same time, etc. But that was probably the most important thing. I learned a lot through that project from both the perspective of how to do it in terms of how to push your idea forward, but also how to technically implement something which is really, really super complex and has to be approved by multiple parties that are more willing to say no than to say yes.
Well, listen, Tancho, this was really useful and I think very valuable. For those that are tuning in for the first time, please continue to listen. We focus on adding really insightful information on, you know, to engineers, product, anyone working in tech on really how you can enhance your career, talking to people that have been leaders in space and, you know, listening to their stories. So please chime in, give us a rating if you like what you hear, and please subscribe to the channel. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jonathan. Thank you.